Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. 3 years ago, Emmy Laybourne debuted her heart-pounding trilogy, Monument 14, where 14 kids and teens sought refuge in a big-box store as the world outside was being ripped apart by violent storms and a release of chemicals that targeted their blood types, making some bloodthirsty killers while rendering others sterile or severely paranoid. As the series continued, the characters and readers were forced to think about the human condition as they considered what actions were too extreme if it meant survival and whether or not we could come back after surrendering ourselves to the darkness. The final book, Monument 14 Savage Drift, is now out, and it is a great pleasure to welcome back Emmy Laybourne to the Roundtable.
It is a joy to be here. It has been so much fun to come on. I've talked about all the books in the series, and here we are with the final one in the trilogy. It's just a delight to be here.
Oh, it makes me so sad that this is the final one, but I have to say, it kept me going. I probably got about 3/4 of the way through, and I'm thinking, there's no way this can be the last book.
I'm sorry to tell you that it is. You know, it's taken me 4 years to write this trilogy. And we had the release of the book and a lot of celebrations. And I got a little bit sick. I got like a head cold. And it wasn't a real head cold. It was like the head cold you get when you have some emotion that you won't allow yourself to feel. And your body's finally like, all right, if you're not going to feel this, I'm going to ground you. And you're just going to have to lie in bed. And as I lay there, I realized I felt really sad about saying goodbye to these characters. And I've been writing them for 4 years. It's like college. You know, I feel the same way I felt at the end of Vassar. I knew I had loved these people very much, and I might not see them again. And that's how I feel this week.
I like to hear you say that, because there are so many authors out there that just say, once they put the characters on the pages, they don't carry them with them, and that's it. They're for the readers, and they're not for them anymore.
I guess so. I guess people could write that way. But I started my professional life as an actor, and so the way that I would create characters was to work from the, really with my body, creating characters in a very organic, deep way, finding their mannerisms, and finding how they walked and talked and loved and felt through my body. So I did the same thing with the characters in this book, so I feel like they came from me, and to not love them would be unthinkable to me. I don't know how I would have been able to do that.
Are you happy with where each of the characters ended up and how you were able to bring this series to a close?
I am. I'm very happy. You know, the first reviews are coming in now, so I'm hearing from readers, and they are happy with where the characters are winding up, and I think that's really important. There are 14 characters. Monument 14, the first book in the trilogy, tells a story of 14 kids from Monument, Colorado, who get trapped in a superstore while civilization collapses outside the gates. So there are 14 characters. So that's a lot of characters to sort of make sure they wind up in the right place. And I really feel that I've done right by them, especially one character, Jake, who is at the end of Savage Drift, he's just off in the world. We don't really know what happens to him, and I think that's right. I think Jake has a way. He's a character who still has a lot of growing up to do. So he's off in the world trying to grow up. But I think everybody else is in a really good place.
That's a really good way to put it, because I was completely satisfied, not really knowing or wanting to know where he was because of how he had acted throughout the three books. And you do get glimpses of a really good person and a person who wants to be a good person. But at the same time, you're thinking, for all the trouble that you are causing, the group would be so much better without you.
Mm. Yeah. With Jake, with all the characters, especially the teenage characters, I really wanted to give them realistic responses to the situations. These are not heroic characters. They're heroic at times. At times they're self-sacrificing. At times they do what's best for the group. But oftentimes they're kids. They're teenagers. And so it was really important to me that anyone reading the book would go, yeah, I might do that. I might be a jerk like that. I might, you know, if I was trapped in a superstore and I knew that millions of people were dead outside, I would definitely hit the pharmaceuticals. you know? Mm-hmm. And so Jake makes a lot of flawed decisions, and I think that's right. I think that makes the book relatable for teens and for people.
It's something that you carried through the entire series, is just how real you made all of the characters, how you brought in the premise where you had these 14 kids and teenagers, but what happened when parents or grown-ups were introduced. And then we see the parents more in this final book and at the end of the other book, but their dynamic from their time at the superstore is still there, and they're still a cohesive family, just these kids and the teenagers.
That's absolutely right. They're very much family. And I think in crafting the ending to the series, it was important that there was a way that the reader could see that these kids would remain family to each other, even if they all weren't in the same place. But that this unit, the Monument 14, is going to be very strong moving into the future.
And so in this novel, we're with the teenagers more. The teenagers branch off. They're at a refugee camp in Vancouver. And they see Josie, who had parted ways with them and told them to move on because she saved them. And she went O, as they say, because that's her blood type. And the chemicals affect people differently by what their blood type is.
That's right, yeah.
And so she told them to go and I'll save you. And so, I mean, Nico, who is just absolutely in love with this girl, says, well, she's alive. We need to find her and get her and bring her back here.
That's right. And also Astrid, who is a senior girl, is pregnant, and they're up in the Vancouver refugee camp. And she has a suspicion that the United States government is taking pregnant women who've been exposed to the compounds in the air for research purposes. And she becomes fearful that they're going to come for her. And so when Nico ends up seeing a picture of Josie, the girl who's being contained at the University of Missouri. Nico decides he's going to go after Josie, and Astrid says, I'm going with you. And then Dean and Jake, who are Astrid's two, there's a little love triangle, and they both want to protect her. And so all four of those kids end up trying to go to the States to rescue Josie and to get Astrid to a point of safety.
And Josie's at a Type O containment camp. It is just absolutely frightening, thinking of the conditions and how she is living there. And she does have a protector, Mario, who we saw in the last book, who's a lovely old man.
80-year-old
yes.
man. Yes.
And
yeah.
It was hard enough to read everything that was happening in the outside world while the kids are in the superstore and about them trying to get to a refugee camp. And then in this novel, we're seeing what's happening in the outside world, and then we're also seeing what's happening in this Type O containment camp. And my gosh, I mean, your heart breaks all over again. It must have been so hard for you to write about two different horrible conditions.
Mm-hmm. It was, and the series of environmental catastrophes that strands the kids in the superstore in the first book involves a terrible mega tsunami that hits the East Coast. So there's a mega tsunami. It's a chain of disasters that comes out feeling pretty credible in the book, but when I just say it out loud, it seems a little far-fetched. But the mega tsunami triggers some severe weather conditions across the country, and in Colorado, there's an earthquake which causes a breach of the chemical weapons storage facilities at NORAD. And so this terrible chemical is leached into the air, which divides the population based on blood type, turning some people into paranoid freaks who hide away. Some people blister up and die. Some people turn into these bloodthirsty killers just bent on murder. And the last blood type don't show any outward signs at all. They've been made sterile and infertile, but otherwise they're fine. And so they sort of watch the carnage around them. But so in this landscape, you have this terrible chemical weapons leak in the Four Corners area of the United States, and the East Coast is completely destroyed by this mega tsunami. So the whole country is in just utter emergency situation to the nth degree. And so I imagined, all right, you know, what happens? So what does the government do? All right, they try to help. They try to set up centers for refugees from the Four Corners disaster. But most of their attention is on the East Coast, where tens of millions of people have been killed and tens of millions of people are displaced. So I was just thinking that the conditions in these refugee camps would be really rough. And then introduced into that mix, there are all of these O-type people who, anyone who's blood type O and who's been exposed to the compounds has had a psychotic episode where they've tried to kill people. And so I thought the government would round those people up and just say, like, for now, you guys are basically criminals. We're putting you here, and you don't have, you know, they've taken away their rights, essentially, and we're going to get to you later. But we've got to deal with these other terrible crises for now. You guys, we know, are certainly unstable and probably really dangerous. So that was my thinking on in the world of this story. And so Josie, our wonderful 16-year-old girl, who acted as a real mother figure to the kids in books 1 and 2, finds herself in this very scary, very dark place. And it was really exciting for me to write her narrative. I found her just furious when I started to write. You know, I started gearing up to write in her voice, thinking about what she would feel like. And she was so ready. She was just sitting in my mind, just sort of snarling, ready to tell her story.
Snarling's a really good way to put it, because she's in a situation where survival is even more key than it was out there, because at least she could hide out there and she can't hide here. And she's also put in pretty much the same situation with Mario taking in all the refugee children that don't have parents and are pushed in this typo containment camp. And she doesn't want to feel responsible for another group of kids because her heart has been broken so much. She doesn't know if they made it out. She doesn't know if they're alive. And so she's hiding away that sadness, and it's turning into anger.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. There's a scene throughout the first two books, Josie frequently tells the little kids stories. The kids that were trapped in the superstore range in age from 5 to 18. So she's in charge. So she sort of became the mama duck to a group of kids from 10 to 5 years old. And she told them a lot of stories, a lot of fantasies about what life would be like when their parents came to get them and they all went home. And there's a scene in Savage Drift where Josie is now talking to this new group of kids who she's reluctantly bonding with. She's trying to get them to calm down. And she winds up telling them a fairy tale about what it was like to be trapped in the superstore. You know, their situation in this camp is so grim that looking back on being trapped in a superstore seems impossibly wonderful, where they have enough to eat and they have clean clothes and they have toys and they're safe.
But there is hope. And the hope is at the very beginning of the book, where we see Alex's letter to the editor about the Monument 14 and making the majority of them making it to the refugee camp.
That's right. There's a lot of hope. And I like to hope myself that in the series, as it's obviously it's very dark. There's a lot of scary stuff that happens and a lot of thriller-esque sequences. But really it's about these kids doing the right thing and coming to find their inner light and making sure that they are taking care of their friends and their new family members. So I think that, as scary as it is, the book has a heart that readers are really connecting to.
We do connect with the characters because we see them grow, and we grow with them when they realize there's no reason to be jealous, or there's no reason to have this anger towards that person, and that they do find the hope and they try to look for the good in people and in their situations.
I think so. I have a keychain from my boarding school, George School in Newtown, Pennsylvania. It says, "Mind the light." And that's like, that was my guiding principle with this series. Mind the light, mind the light. As dark as it is, make sure everyone is minding the light.
Well, it is an amazing conclusion to the trilogy. The name of it is Savage Drift. Emmy, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
It is a joy. Thank you, Katie, for talking to me every year about this series. It's been really wonderful to connect with you this way and with your listeners.
Again, the name of Emmy Laybourne's final book in the Monument 14 trilogy is Savage Drift. It is published by Fywell & Friends. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.